Well, my name is John, and I'm a student of Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh, and a lay Dharma teacher in that tradition, which is the Vietnamese Zen tradition that comes from the Lin Chi school in China, original, 9th century. Still one of the five houses of Zen, as they call it, and it's still practicing today. And I've been coming here for a little while. Of years. I don't know when I first came to Uni Huts, but quite a few years anyway. Interesting. But anyway, it's got that history. I lose count these days and everything. I think something's 2 years ago, it's probably 5 or 10. So. I grasp, I see, I let go. It's not my topic. Whoever gives these topics, comes up with these topics, I think they're excellent topics to come up with. And I know that I was concentrating when I put this talk together on the title of the talk, and it was only today when I looked at Victoria's text that she sent me about the change of room that I realised there was a lot about forgiveness and letting go. So we'll get to forgiveness. It will be totally off the cuff, but I'm sure if you've got any questions about forgiveness that we could bring that in as well. So grasping really is holding on to something. It's not letting go. It's the opposite of that. Sometimes grasping is associated with craving, with wanting, something we want. But not always. You know, sometimes the things that we hold on to are things like fear and strong emotions, perhaps. But it's not limited to that. So, just for a moment, I'd just like you to go into your imagination. By the way, one of the things maybe I shouldn't say that I do because it might become obvious is that I teach Buddhism in schools from kindergarten to some high schools as well, so you might get a flavour of that. And young people, as I like to call them, not kids but children, young people, even if they're only 4 or 5 years old, they love to use their imagination. So, you know, there's a 5-year-old still in you, in the year. It's very nice to remember that at times, because you know, 5-year-olds, they're very joyful. They haven't come across a lot of the things that, the stresses and things that we as, when we're more grown up, have come across. But just for a moment, imagine that you've held on to everything that you've ever had in your possession. And that you've still got it. You can't let it go. Can't give it away. The floppy toys when you were 1 or 2 years old, maybe. Even the stickers that you got when you were a good little boy or a little girl in kindergarten and you sat still or did something good. You know, the merit cards you earned for school. Some of you earned the merit card. Maybe sporting trophies, or the Christmas presents and birthday presents you ever got that you really loved at the time. Just your favourite t-shirts that you grew out of long ago. Maybe grew out of the size. Just imagine for a moment, just think of all those things and imagine if you still had them all. Imagine all those different things. Just an example of that. What was your favourite thing you had? Most of those things, I'm guessing, you probably don't have a thought on it. And maybe you don't have to imagine anything and you still have all of them, I don't know. What about friends that you had through your formative years? Do you still have all those friends? What if you held on to all of them? How would you go now, keeping in touch with all those friends you had through school? Maybe you have lifelong friends, and that's great, but some friends you had, for whatever reason, circumstances, you let go of them. We kept all the friends we ever had, then maybe we'd be very busy now keeping in touch with them. Maybe on Facebook you can do that. Or even, were there fears that you had at different stages of growing up? Just about strangers, maybe about spiders or mice or cockroaches, maybe even going for a swim in the ocean, you had a fear that maybe a shark's going to come up and have you for breakfast. Were there things that you feared once, maybe fear of the dark? You still have every fear that you ever had, or you let go of some of those fears that you managed to let go. So there are so many things that we could hold on to, but if we really think about it, a lot of the things we have managed to let go of, or that we no longer hold on to, maybe you still are hanging on to every fear that you ever have. If we did that, as we grew up, we were accumulating all these things. We'd all be nervous wrecks now, just worried about this or that. So in some ways, we have to transform or learn how to deal with or cope with those strong emotions. And fear is just one example of strong emotions. To use maybe a metaphor for letting go, and this time of year, being autumn, especially if there's deciduous trees naturally in autumn, let go of their leaves. It's a natural process, and they may hibernate for winter, but the fact that the old leaves have gone allows for new leaves and new growth to come through at another time. So some things we let go on and others we still hold on tightly to. We can't let go on. Maybe even some of those things, some of those fears, they're still there, but we actually haven't... We don't want to look at them anymore. So maybe we put them in a shoebox and stuck them in a cupboard or under the bed. But they come up at other times when we least expect them. Sometimes we can put them out of our mind, but we haven't really let go of them. And the last thing, apart from difficult emotions, is that we have a tendency to hang on to is our ideas about life, our emotions. Maybe it's something that someone said to us when we were young, a saying, and it might have been appropriate in that setting. But what about later in life, or in every situation, is that a sort of rule that we sort of sometimes even unconsciously run our lives like that? we have this idea about this or that. And again, we may not go back and check on it and say, well, am I sure about that idea that I've got? Sometimes it becomes more than an idea or a notion, it becomes like a belief. And it's, we hold it and hold on to it so closely that we don't scrutinize it, we don't go back and check, ask, am I sure? But because of that idea, we may suffer, it may cause us grief. But of course, many ideas that we have, we may in fact look at again, and things can change over time. So the first ideas that we ever had when we were young about life, about the way things are, we came up against other things, and we did have a chance to let them go. But we don't really look too closely at that, because they become so much just a part of us and our habits and the way that we do things. When we can sit in meditation, sometimes we can pick these things, and when our mind is clear and we're like the lake, when we settle, we can see things clearly. And then it's time to maybe look at those things and just say, am I sure about this? What is the way I'm behaving? What did I say in relation to this? I reacted in a certain way and I responded because deep down underneath there was this idea that this was the way that you should respond, for instance, or react to it. Where did I get that from in the first place? That idea that you should. So I'd just like to do this exercise now with everyone. And I want you to write down all the things, but maybe material things that you hang on to. They may be feelings towards someone, maybe of resentment, maybe a relationship that you hold on to that is maybe not so healthy to be with that person. Habit. Too much of your phone or things. With my children, my teenage children, it's like, boy, stop them gaming on their phone or just being on social media with their friends till midnight. It's really difficult to deal with that. Or it might be an emotion that you can't get away from. It might be an idea about your own ability to do something. You feel, oh, you know, I'm no good at this. You know, I'm not a good sports person. I'm not a good coder. It's an idea you have, and it holds you back. Just like brainstorm the things that it may be. Strong feelings that you always go back to. Start with the easy ones if you're having trouble putting something down. I'm going to do it too. Thank you. Well, maybe it's something that you find difficult to accept. I know it's challenging. I can't accept that I worked so hard for that exam. I thought I got an A and then he gave me a C. Oh, that's not right. The person's not my friend anymore. I didn't do anything wrong. I don't appreciate it. I can't accept that. It's not right. Could be something much deeper than that. Something that you find with a little bit of touch. My dad passed away when I was 15. He's not here anymore. I'm always wishing that he was here. Maybe it's something you don't have. Friend, what a beautiful car. What can I have? Continue this tomorrow, next time, have some quiet time to yourself. It's not an exercise you can do while you're rushing around and you've got other things on your mind. You really have to be still. Put our pins down. And you keep your list with you. Might be in the shower or wake up first thing in the morning and then something will come to you and you think, oh, that's how it looks. Is there a good reader here? Someone would like to read a poem? It's an opportunity to hear a different voice other than mine.
sure.
I'll give it a go. They're all shy. You're shy.
You yeah. Doing green. Yes.
Okay.
And this is by
Mary Oliver. Okay, A Thousand Mornings. Poem. Mary Oliver is the author. And the poem is called Hurricane.
Okay.
So, it didn't behave like anything you had ever imagined. The wind tore at the trees, the rain fell, the days slant and hard. The back of the hand to everything. I watched the trees bow and their leaves fall and crawl back into the earth, as though that was that. There was one hurricane. I lived through the other one. The other one was of a different sort and lasted longer. Then I felt my own leaves giving up and falling. The back of the hand to everything. But listen now to what happened to the actual trees. Toward the end of that summer, they had pushed new leaves from their stubbed limbs. It was the wrong season, yes, but they couldn't stop. They looked like telephone poles and didn't care. And after the leaves came, blossoms. For some things, there are no wrong seasons, which is what I dream of for me. So I just die. There you go, sir.
Thank you. Nicely read. When I read this poem, I didn't know what it meant, the back of the hand. So, anyone got any ideas what the back of the hand is? I have.
Like, when I was listening to it, I was imagining sort of like showing that McDonald's has to go like sort of like...
Should I ask my friend to copy? I have a copy of my friend's other dad's on a Friday morning. And some of them growing up in pretty tough circumstances. So, yeah, one of the they all realise that the back of the hand is like getting a slap. Not politically correct these days, certainly not in classrooms, anywhere really. But, you know, when we were growing up, my age, there was sort of punishment in classrooms. You used to get the cane was one thing if you were in trouble.
They used to throw the bloody duster.
Yeah, right.
The wooden duster.
Yes, so some teachers had more of a temper than others like this.
So the back of the hand means to get a slap. And it's here, I think it means that the environment of the trees have had a really shock. And they lose all their leaves, and yet, even though they lose their leaves, then the leaves can grow back even when it's not in the season.
They lose their confidence.
Yeah.
Because if you're a child and an adult, it's usually the father is giving you the hand, and you get that wind velocity before it strikes, and that's the memory, and then there's like what happened. The shock. It's like a rain, a hurricane.
Yeah. Very strong image for you.
But sometimes we need to really suffer, like to get a shock like the hurricane or back of the hand, for us to let go of something before we really think, okay, that's enough. You know, I'm sick of this cycle of samsara. I'm sick of going through this again and again. I really need to let go of here, whatever it is we might be having to let go of. So sometimes we can just see it without getting that push, but other times, I'm working in this job and it really is, you know, not pleasant for me, and I know I'm getting paid, but like, I don't want to do this anymore. We get to that point. So sometimes letting go, we can just see it without that trigger, but sometimes we need a trigger. It really makes us decide we want to hang on. So I felt that that's something of Mary Oliver. Mary Oliver actually let go earlier this year. She was in her 90s and she passed away. I've not read a lot of her poems, but there was one or two that I really liked, and I'm not sure if she was a Buddhist, but she certainly was in touch with nature. A lot of her poems are about nature. So if you have a chance to look her up, then I'd recommend it. What I do is like to just use the sound of the bell just as a thing for us to come back. So when we think about, we've been thinking now, okay? I've been asking you to think what are all the things you'd like to let go of, and you're really trying hard to think. You're really putting your mind into that. But if we can, during the day, just come back to our breath and stop, and we can do that regularly, then it's a great habit to develop. We get out of our head and we come back to our body, maybe our heart, or just to our breath at least, and which is a function of our body after all. So let's just try that now. Sound of the bell, and we can follow our breath and our out breath, and have that as our single point of attention. Maybe a little smaller. Okay. It only takes a few seconds to stop during the day. Have that habit, remembering to stop, come back and just, you know, what am I doing now? My head's been somewhere else. Maybe I'm carrying some sort of energy, an emotion. Could be worrying about something, my own time for this. Am I going to get my assignment in? Is it going to be good enough? Whatever it is, we've always got things going on in our heads. Sort of always on, so it's good to switch off and just create that habit a little bit more. If you can create those spaces during the day, then you're giving yourself space and a little bit of freedom. So I'd just like to talk a little bit about stealing from something I've been doing with my primary school classes and been able to do it right through is this story of, which is a pretty well-known book, you know, I wouldn't be surprised for children about. It's called Moody Cow Meditates. Has anyone ever come across it? It's been around for a while. And it's about a young, well, it's a cow, it's an illustrated book. And he starts by having a bad dream, so he wakes up and he's already in a state of fear, wants to know where his mum is. And then his day sort of progressively gets worse. His sister draws on his skateboard, that upsets him, he pulls his sister, who is also a cow, pulls her tail, she pushes him down the stairs, then he's late for his bus because he's sort of starting to build resentment and anger within himself, and he misses the school bus, so he's got to ride to school in the snow, his bike falls over, he hurts his knee, on the way home he's not paying attention, still carrying that anger around, and he turns into the driveway, drives into the back of his dad's truck, and he breaks his nose, but it starts bleeding as well as his knee, and on it goes. Then he gets upset, and he's so sort of peed off with everything, he picks up a baseball and deliberately throws it through the window. Just happens his mother's watching. Mum sort of says, "Oh, aren't you a little moody cow?" It was me, I don't think I'd be that patient. And she says, "Mum, with my kids, picked up a rock and threw it through the window." But she says, "I think you need to go over and see Grandpa." So of course, Grandpa's... oh, by the way, when Mum says, "Aren't you a little moody cow?" His sister and all her friends are standing by, and they sort of all start to tease him, going, "Moody cow, moody cow, Peter is a moody cow." Because, you know, he really got stick out of his ears. So, he goes over to see Grandpa, and because Grandpa's sitting there with his legs crossed, I won't do it, but, you know, looking like he's meditating. And, you know, he knows the story, and he invites Peter to sit down. And he shows him and brings in the mind in the jar. So has anyone seen this before? So this thing is like a little gimme, I suppose, that... Hello, children. You don't have to let me get tired of seeing this. So the idea is with this is it has some glitter in it, and the glitter represents strong emotions or states of mind that could be fear, could be anger, could be sadness or anxiety, confusion, any of those things that we might have. And his grandfather gets him to pick up a little sprinkle of that and put it into the clear water. So it's clear. It's not. I'm not going to do that. But it's already in there. So all of those things are in there waiting to be stirred up. And of course, when you stir it up, it goes like this. And this is I suppose, a metaphor for our mind, in that our mind is not seeing things clearly. And when it gets shaken up, then Grandpa rings the bell and says, "Okay, now we're going to sit still, and we're just going to allow this to settle and swallow in breath and out breath." And gradually, all of those strong emotions, or the strong emotion that is represented by the glitter that is not letting us see things clearly, settles to the bottom. So, it just happened to be pink glitter, and it's coloured from what about that. So, I know it's a pretty obvious thing, but the point being that whenever we have these sort of really states of mind, and we can't allow it to settle down, and we can't let go of that state of mind, then we can't see things clearly. We can't make good decisions. We're probably not hearing other people when they speak to us, because we have this mind state that is clouding everything. And, you know, there's a saying in Buddhism that if we're angry, and we look at the moon, and we see an angry moon. We see a sad, we see a sad moon. So everything that we perceive is then coloured by that mind state that's predominantly there. I was trying to use these the other day. Oh, there we go. With my high school students, I only have about eight. Just sitting boys high here. And I couldn't work out how to open this that I bought for Office Works. So I said, oh, can you guys help me? Actually, they passed it around the whole class. Nobody could open it. It's actually open today. But eventually, you know, among us, it's also good to know that two heads are better than one. So, letting go in the Buddha's teaching is actually an aspect of true love. So, the Buddha said that is made up of four things, has four aspects, and without all of those things, then that love is sort of somehow defective. It's not really true love. So it can be my own abbreviation. Kindness, calm, sometimes loving kindness is what commonly is. Compassion's a really big word for kindergarten children, so I just think of it as care. Caring. Okay. Sometimes we might think of caring as being caring for others, but caring for ourselves as well. Does anyone know another one?
Thank
you. Yeah, I was going to do that last, but we could put that in here. So,
is that the
kid? Going to get down to that, I'm going to call this last one balanced mind. And the other one here is joy. So, for instance, if you have love for someone and it doesn't bring them joy, then that's not really love. It's like the teacher maybe who used to give the back of the hand. I'm just giving you the back of the hand because I really love you. Whack! And then you've got this great fear that's brought up in you because you... I remember we had a teacher and he used to give the cane, but he'd give the cane to kids in front of the rest of the class. Like, so it's, you sort of sitting there fearful watching, oh no, I can't look at this. Oh, you have the same love. Then after a while, you take them out and do it in the corridor. At least that was better. So loving kindness, you might know that as compassion, joy, and the last one, balanced mind, that has lots of aspects to it. It can be equanimity, can be non-attachment, non-judgment. Non-discrimination, so your love doesn't discriminate. You can have boundless love. It can be just acceptance, accepting things that happen rather than wanting them to be the way you think they should be. All of these things come in in this aspect. So letting go is correct. That is also a part of equanimity. It's probably the most difficult one to see how that is an aspect of love, of letting go. But the way I look at it is that if you can think of all of these things in terms of, say, a loving kindness meditation, where you normally start with yourself, because you know there's this great saying, I'm not saying you should believe this, you should scrutinize it as well, but you know, if you can't love yourself, you can't love others. So we can think of all of these things in terms of if we have true love, if we're able to let go, if we're able to be non-judgmental, all of those things are in fact ways of loving ourselves, of giving ourselves, having good well-being towards ourselves. So that's where I think letting go fits in terms of the Buddha's teaching. I just wanted to put that in the context of where it is. I'll just do another thing here. Use a different colour. I've got a bit of a leaning towards doing these matrices, so excuse me. I found them a very good way, particularly when I was in business, explaining things to people. So the aspect of joy is also really important in what we cultivate within ourselves. So on the one hand, all of the things that we wrote down about difficult emotions, like in the jar and the mind in the jar, might be fear and anxiety and anger and little things that might push our buttons or upset us. Sadness, we get stuck in that, we can't get out of it. But hanging on to those things and holding on to them, or going over them in our mind and and making them worse and bigger than they are, sometimes called the second arrow. You know, the first arrow is you wake up in the morning and you're just not feeling, you're a little bit down, not feeling great. But then in your mind you go over, oh, I'm not feeling great today, you know, I'm miserable, and you walk around like this, and there's another reason, oh, look, there's a big black cloud over my head and it just rained on me, I didn't bring an umbrella today, and, oh, you know, you make it worse by thinking it about over and over again. And what you should do is, of course, just stop, come back to your breath, smile, remember the flower in you, remember the mountain, remember the lake, let it settle down, let that sadness go back into your store consciousness and be weaker next time it comes up. So being able to take care of the strong emotions is really important. So on this end, we can put something here. Of difficult feelings, for instance. And on this end, of course, is where we... So this is like an XY axis. This is a lot. We're doing really well in taking care of our difficult feelings here. And this down here is... unchecked. So yeah, it's really important that we can take care of those things. If we leave them unchecked, then we are at their mercy. They're running our life for us, okay? We're sort of like, you know, we're not the king of our kingdom anymore. We've handed over the sovereignty to some usurper. And you know, whatever we get, then that's how it's going to be. But on this axis, we can put the fact that we need to also cultivate joy. So we need to do things in our day that are joyful. Maybe it's for you, I don't know, what are the things that you do that are joyful for you, maybe, that you do during the day? Come on, just yell it out.
Draw.
Draw. You have a little drawing pad that you take with you?
No.
Okay. You have to go to an art class to do it?
No, like, I just draw like random pieces of
paper. I hope you don't draw the walls around here. Just random pieces of paper, okay. Yeah, that's good. And what can we ask for what you draw?
Like, I'm just experimenting with watercolors.
I use watercolors in my classes. Children don't normally use, I use watercolor pencils. And I love watercolor pencils because they don't get to use them very often. But, you know, it's something they learn how to use them, and there's lots of great little techniques you can use. Yeah. Anybody else? What else can people do that they love to do? Maybe you love to do it, but you're actually... It's been a long time since I did it. I was saying to someone earlier, I love going to the ocean, going for a swim in the ocean. I don't know why, but that's fine. All I have to do is put my feet in, even just walk along the shore and let my feet feel that. Even in the sand, it's nice. But to go in for a swim in the ocean feels great.
Like hiking.
Hiking.
The forest.
Yeah.
Actually, doing 2-week trips.
Wow.
Just getting away from everyone and getting. Yeah. It takes about that long just to get into the rhythm of the bush. Get into there's a rhythm within the natural world, and coming out of this, our rhythm, into their rhythm, takes a couple of weeks. But once you're there, it's good.
Where do you hike?
Great out of the Alps. Done a bit in the Alps.
In Europe?
No, it's not in Canberra, down towards Melbourne.
Yeah.
And I've done, I lived in Sweden for 6 years. So I used to go regularly. They have, there's a certain point, there are very few people living. So I used to go through the boreal forest and just live in the forest, camping. Not like making caveman yet. Like, yeah, and seeing the caribou and the moose and the bear and the wolf. Squirrels are cool. Yeah, very cute. And there's wolverine, and there's lots of things out there. Yeah,
I can tell you what you're cool about that. You're animated telling us.
That's
great.
Totally cool.
Somebody else. What else? Come on. Yeah.
What do you like doing? What do you enjoy?
You want me to do it?
Sleep.
You mean just like during the day? Because I mean, we all sleep at night. I mean, well, you just get really a buzz out. I'll
go to bed now. Yeah,
that's good. You must sleep well, right? Oh, you don't sleep well, but you enjoy the little bit you get. Anybody else has got something? Yeah. Dancing? Dancing, yeah, dancing. So whatever it is that it brings us joy, you know, actually it's a good thing to start to write down a list of all the things that are your joys. It might be, they don't have to be, you know, things that are expensive. maybe it's just walking down this beautiful corridor out here underneath the trees, appreciating that you're in the shade, or could be anything that you start to think about, like I bet you to think about before things that you might have difficulty letting go of, but what are the things that you find joyful, and are you cultivating, are you doing those things? Or were there things that made you joyful in the past that you've sort of actually forgotten about? They're in the box, under the bed, in the shoebox, and you put them away. You haven't got that shoebox out for a long time, but that's a shoebox of joys. What are they? Because just like your emotions, your difficult emotions, and you learn to take care of them, if you don't, then they become unchecked. Your joy is the same. If you don't cultivate it, if you don't water it, if you don't nourish it, it's going to shrink and wither, maybe eventually die. But in order to do this, take care of our strong emotions, sometimes we need the strength of the joyful things in our life. We need that as well. So you end up with these four quadrants, and which quadrant would you rather be in? This quadrant down here, which is this quadrant, is we might say, I love this word, I don't know, it just conjures up something very strong, joylessness. Are you somebody who is joyless? At times, maybe. So this quadrant down here is sort of contains joylessness and unchecked feelings, sort of, I don't know, anyone have a term for this? I think there's sort of lots of problems. You know, who wants to be around somebody who hasn't got control of their anger, or who's always sad and miserable, and it's never any fun. So, and then, you know, with all of these quadrants, we can just map a little bit, or think about, just helps us to think about, you know, where are we? Am I sort of, you know, this week, am I just drifting into this quadrant here where I've got lots of joy, but, you know, I'm not taking care of my difficulties? You know, that could be easy. We could be eating lots of comfort food, doing some shopping therapy. That'll wallpaper all over my problems. You know, I don't have to worry about them, but I feel pretty joyful, like, because I've just got new stuff and, you know, I'm full, my tummy's full, so this could be wallpapering. Maybe being a little bit familiar.
That's distracted.
Distracting?
Distracted,
yeah.
Like social media use, mobile phone use, using them as methods to, that you think you're joyful, but you're just engaged, distracted. It's not. I always see joy as when we're little kids and we're just bursting with energy and you just run around and it's like, yeah, it's like full of energy and you don't eat much either. You're so energized. That's that joy, yeah, and you're always giving. Most kids are giving. Versus finding joy from a film or a comedy or an external thing versus an internal.
There's nothing wrong with any of those things per se. You know, going shopping, enjoying a meal. But if we think that we're going to get long-term happiness from that, then we need to look into whether we are, or whether, you know, that's taking up too much of our time. You know, it might be okay to be on social media and be in contact with your friends for a certain amount of time, but if it takes up all your time, you know, something else is missing out. So, you know, we might take good care of our, you know, be very diligent about looking after our feelings and be very serious about our practice in that way. But if we haven't got joy and we're over here, you know, we can be too serious. You know, maybe we're a little bit moralistic with others, judging. So, again, if we're over here, I think this comes back to what I said here about this aspect of having equanimity or having a balanced mind. We're sort of happier, more content. So, sorry, but getting a little bit away from letting go and forgiveness.
Nothing's quite important. It's fine, but because if our mind is in a particular area, that's how we see the world, then we're not able to let go if we can't see what's around us. And then if we focus our lives in the morning, for example, and we clear, then we can see things that need to be looked on, and therefore we'll move more into a balanced mind. I think it's a whole range of different things that have to, you have to juggle to get that. Because I should. But you know, I know when I'm in it, that clarity is really an interesting place to be.
Yeah, so it's nice to maybe just ask yourself, what am I doing now? Where is my mind now? Maybe when you're, you know, from time to time. I run workshops for new scripture teachers as well, and scripture teachers in New South Wales. And one of the things I say to them is, before you go into the class, just do a little bit of a check on yourself and ask yourself, you know, what state of mind am I in this morning? Could I just driven to the school and maybe someone cut me off and I had to stop holding on to a little bit of road rage, or is there something else going in my life where I'm a little bit sad this morning? Be aware of yourself and what it is that's there. All of these things are perfectly natural. You know, we don't get rid of anger ever. It's just, it'll come up. But we need to learn how to deal with it. The same with sadness, the same with doubt or confusion about things. We never get to a stage where those things don't exist. They keep coming like clouds on a windy day. But, you know, we try not to hang on to the cloud and let it go. It's trying to hold on to it that creates the suffering. Or being able to know that it's there, to see that it's there, and to go, okay, I'm going to let it go now. I'm not going to hold on to it. If a thought comes up that sort of reminds me of that person cut me off, and, you know, I'm still angry about it. I was in the right. They should have let me, you know, into that lane. How come they be so selfish? You know, all of these thoughts come up, and we sort of regurgitating things in our mind. We're playing it over and over again. That person said that to me. Why did they say that? I didn't deserve that. You know, we need to be able to do that. So, one of the ways to be able to let go, what the Buddha taught was the idea that we are not separate self, the idea of non-self. So in the Diamond Sutra there were four things the Buddha said that we actually have to let go of. One is that we're a separate self, that we're not connected. You know, when you go hiking in nature, you know, you feel nature. Nature becomes a part of you. When we feel hurt by somebody, we're looking at it through the prism of how we feel. So in us there's this natural, probably survival instinct that says, you know, fight or flight. But we feel that we're being hurt, and we're only looking at it from our point of view. So then we project onto the other person that we get upset with that person who's pushed our button or that who's upset us. But if we try to look at it in terms of compassion and understanding, not just from our own self or selfish point of view, the prism of looking out, then we can try to understand that person, try to understand them. But you know, maybe they didn't mean to hurt us. Maybe they are having a bad day themselves, like Moody Cow. But all of these things can help us with letting go. So not, I mean, why do we feel ourselves upset? We can ask ourselves that question. Why is it that what that person said or did to me upset me and got through and hurt me? Was I physically hurt? So it's us who allows us to be hurt. We allow that. Sure, you know, in Buddhism we practice not saying unkind things, but we can't expect that to be everyone in the world to be like that. And in fact, you know, I mean, not being moralistic in judging others is a part of the balanced mind. It's a part of equanimity. It's not judging. In fact, it's a really important part of mindfulness. Mindfulness is not really mindfulness if it comes with judgment. So see, we might see things clearly, and if we only see things clearly with this, to I start judging someone, because you can be mindful and you see things clearly, but if judgment goes with it, it's gone off on a sidetrack that is not non-harming and kind to others. But we want to be in this, I know it's sort of like a direction that we want to go, and we might feel, oh gee, I'll never get there, but we want to make it so that everything we do is in Buddhism is, we don't want to upset somebody. We want to be as kind as we possibly can. It's not that we don't say things if we think that, you know, something's really wrong, that we don't speak out about it, but we find a way to speak out about it that is skillful. So, you know, even to the extent where my teacher, when he comes into the room, you know, he very carefully opens the door. And he very carefully closes the door. Doesn't want to disturb anybody, but he's being very mindful. So really being mindful about it comes down to that. Everything we say, we're thinking about not harming, not upsetting others. We're thinking about harmony in relationships.
You have seen those kids, yeah? How do you get them to clean their room?
I tell you, with my kids, I'm not a very good parent, because if I go in and clean it for them, their mom gets very upset with me, but They're both my two teenagers. One's doing a HSC this year, and the other one's in year 10. They're studying. I think that's pretty good. You know, sometimes they stay up all night doing their assignments.
But how many in that situation as you clean their report? Got it.
It's a you know, and I realise it's probably not really a bad thing to do. I think my kids have different personalities, so my daughter will just drop anything anywhere. She's 14 years old, and you know, she's got a rubbish bin in her room, but it seems like it's always empty and the rubbish is everywhere else. My son is been better this year because he's in year 12 doing it, HSC. You know, he is focusing a little bit more, but I just got his report. I have a parent portal and got the report, so it just came yesterday. First of all, I got the brief report, and it sort of said his subjects, his five subjects now, just said what he got AD. I was really happy with that when I read it. But then the full report came through with all the teachers' comments, and one of the teachers sort of said, it would be good if Dylan wasn't on his phone the whole time during class. I just was horrified at that. And then he sort of said, he's one of these people who lose everything to the last minute. So they go to school, and he tells me, I always get to school on time, and I read his report, like, it would be good if Dylan turned up to class on time, with another one. Anyway, I wasn't so happy when I read the detail.
Yeah, one thing with the teaching and then the practice, and the reality of being a family, how close people are to us, can be, it's like a practice, and then it will depend on the situation. And you've got to be kind to yourself as well.
So I know, of course, my kids, they've been on Buddhist retreats, and they know a Buddhist teacher, and they've got a Buddha in the house and things. But, of course, it's down in throat and it's nice for them to know those things. I believe strongly that children, young people, it's not what you say to them, they don't listen to that. They watch your behaviour, and that's what they learn from. So with my classes, I think it's really important to create a joyful environment, because when we have joy, we also learn better. You think about it, the things that you like to do, it's much easier for you to really apply yourself to it and learn it. If you've got a subject and you think, I don't like this subject, that might just be an idea. Change your mind, look at it a different way, and turn it upside down. Sometimes my kids say, I can't do this subject because I don't like the teacher. I say, you're going to have lots of people you don't like, bosses you don't like, things in your life, you're going to have to overcome that. You're still going to have to do that subject. You're still going to have to get a mark from it. You don't have good teachers and bad teachers. If you get all bad teachers, you can't be a victim and just make that the excuse as to why you haven't done well in that, or tried your best. So the environment is really important. That's why I see that here at UniCut. You create all these fun things to do during the week. You have this great program. There's harmony. You work well together. It's a great environment. And when you have a good environment, then it's conducive to learning, to well-being. And there's some American psychologist, the father of American psychology, Carl Rogers, and he was, you know, somebody asked him, how come you're such a, I'm such a great teacher? And he said, oh, I don't teach anything. He said, I just create an environment for learning, and the students do the rest. So that's about creating joy, cultivating joy, creating an environment for joy in everything we do. So we're going to leave some time for Q&A. But we do have to get on to forgiveness. And there's this quote that I like here, which was from the Buddha. And he said that even if robbers cut off your limbs with a saw, if anger arises in you, then you are not a follower of my teachings. So he used these really strong images. To be a disciple of the Buddha, you must bear no hatred, you must utter no unkind words, and you must remain compassionate with no hostility or holding on to hostility or ill will. Oh, it's a real North Star, you know, to imagine that we can be like that. I don't know if you saw with the Christchurch murders that there were some people interviewed afterwards who'd survived that, who had relatives who'd been shot and killed, who could speak very calmly afterwards. I don't know if you saw that. And just the thing that struck me was that their practice or what they'd learnt in their religion had taught them how to have that amount of unbelievable equanimity at that time, that something really shocking had happened in their life. And now, a lot of them spoke later that they didn't hold any anger or ill will towards the person who committed those murders. You know, I guess we don't know until we have that that real hurricane, but they didn't hold on to ill will, and it just was quite amazing to see that. So that's an extreme. I guess that's a hurricane in that sense. But you know, that letting go is there. So I think forgiveness is sometimes said to be that you don't forgive the act that that person has done, but you forgive the person. And this comes back to this idea of that, you know, we're not a separate self, that we are able to see, look with compassion towards others when they've done something. So normally we want to forgive because we've been injured or hurt. That's the normal basis, and therefore if we can't forgive, it's because we hold on to that hurt, and that hurt is the strongest thing. Sometimes it's to be able to be in touch with the earth can be helpful, for instance, something greater than us. So we to get away from that. And you know, walking meditation can be very helpful when there's a really strong emotion in us. It may be anger that we feel that we can't forgive, resentment. But to be in touch with the earth is to be in touch with something bigger than us and realize that we are just a part of the earth. And you know, we throw all sorts of things on the earth. Pesticides, you know, our rubbish, our landfill. But the earth takes them and it accepts them, and it is able to transform them back into things that aren't so toxic. So when we're in touch with something bigger like the earth, we can also use that connection that we have with the earth. We can feel, if we feel like we've got to forgive and we've really been hurt, we can feel closed in as well. So to be out and just see the open space of the sky. Space is very helpful. And that image of space is helpful, that we're not stuck, confined, holding on to things and feeling like we're locked in, this place we can't get out of. We can't forgive, can't make up. So to be in touch with nature, that can be very helpful in letting go of things and helping us forgive. I mean, what examples would you have of difficulties in forgiving someone? Forgiveness? Or do you...
Real examples?
Yeah, examples where you can't, and you find it difficult to forgive.
Things like murder, that your children are murdered, or a child is murdered. That would be difficult to forgive someone, because society tells us not to, as well.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, at an extreme, we want revenge, you know, not in our own laws at the moment, but, you know, in the past, in certain cultures, you know, it's an eye for an eye.
Yeah. So that would probably be one of the strongest ones, as a something outside of ourselves. And perhaps an internal one would be if you've been traumatized in some manner, and then you'd want revenge, or you feel of hate. So then to forgive the act or the person would take a lot.
Where would you know, where do you feel that in your body? Where do you feel that real hate that might come up? So recognizing it, seeing it is the first thing. Holding it so that it doesn't take over your words or your actions, and letting it calm down, to calm in itself. That very strong feeling. So what we're talking about here is strong, really, really strong feelings. But what about just forgiving yourself for things? Are there things that you can't forgive yourself for, that you feel like you've done? You judged yourself harshly and you haven't let go. Well, we all make mistakes. Or I do. I don't know. Maybe you don't. But you know, are there things that we've done that we, you know, maybe we just keep it pretty close to our chest, but in our quiet moments we haven't really forgiven ourselves for that things, something. I mean, it's very hard in public to sort of, you know, say these things, but if we think back about things, you know, and have we let that go? Have we allowed that to go? Or are we holding on to that? You know, is that still something that we've held on to? I think there's no shame in any of that. It's a very human thing. Not to forgive yourself sometimes.
Sometimes it can like sort of form like a bit of like a cycle. Like, for example, if you were to be someone who's like a bit of a perfectionist and you want things to go perfectly and things don't, and you blame yourself for it. But knowing full well that you shouldn't be blaming yourself for all these things and that you should let them go, but not being to let them go, leading to you blaming yourself even more, can kind of create like a cycle that kind of keeps going sometimes.
Vicious circle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a cycle of samsara. But the good thing is just to recognize it. Okay, I'm doing that now. What have I got to do? What do you have to do? It requires a little bit of discipline, a little bit of effort. You realize that this is just making things worse and worse. You've got to stop it. In the sutra on the four establishments of mindfulness, once it gets down to, there is one of the last ones is letting go, and this is what the Buddha said about that. When anger is not present in him, he's aware, so he appreciates the fact that that strong feeling is not there. Even it's hating or not forgiving yourself for something, okay, it's not there. And when, so that's sort of different to sort of recognizing that anger is there. You can sort of say, well, it's not there all the time. And then when anger has already arisen and has been let go, or the Buddha used stronger terms than that, like abandoned or thrown away. So sometimes letting go, we can let go of something, and you know, the example that I always use is say with material things. I've got something and I no longer need it, but I can't bring myself to throw it out, so I put it under the house. I've got a lot of stuff under the house, and then one day I go, oh, look, I really don't need this, I should throw it out, I should let it go. So I take it out and I put it on the council throw out. And then at about 9 o'clock at night, I go, well, maybe that thing might come in handy one day, you never know. So I go and I take it back and I bring it back inside. So sometimes we let go of things, but only later on to grab them. But the Buddha said, okay, when anger that has arisen in us has been abandoned, he is aware of that, or she is aware of that, meaning the practitioner is aware of it. And then when anger that's already been abandoned and will not arise again in the future, so this is when the council's actually come and you didn't go and bring it back inside, they took it away, in my example, he is aware of it. And then similarly you can do that for when his mind is attached, he is aware, my mind. Oh, when his mind is not attached, he's aware my mind is not attached, and then through when that attachment has been abandoned, he is aware. So a lot of it is about the seeing, the awareness, and you know, doing that without judgment, without being harsh on yourself.
Forgiveness, it's a big one. You have to forgive yourself all the time.
Give yourself all the time.
And get used to it until it's not even thinking about it. Like think judging people or that judgment, and just stop it. Then forgive yourself for the act. Like it's an acknowledgement of the thought and then the forgiveness of oneself for having the thought, so don't make yourself wrong. Because judgment's quite normal. It's just how we're always judging, yeah? And then I have a twin. So when I see her, she she brings up stuff from the family, and I've forgotten all about it because I'm not holding on to it anymore, and she is, because I've dealt with it. So, although those things that don't exist anymore, but if I think about it, wow, I was like angry for years and years, and then now when I've dealt with it, it's like, oh, I can't even remember it. So I find that quite interesting as well.
Yeah. So it's that very much the non-judgment of equanimity or of a balanced mind includes acceptance and forgiveness, and accepting my sister. It's not my twin, but I found her very difficult in the past. I don't know if you. We always used to fight when we were kids. Sibling rivalry was strong. But now, I do my best just to be in harmony with her and not say things that I know are going to sort of inflame her. So I do my best, And, you can't always be, you can't always get it right. So, I don't know, does anyone have any questions or anything they'd like to reflect on? I hope no one feels worse because of this. I notice now with, anything to do with a news story or something about people have depression or suicide, then they always have to say, and if you're having any problems with this, please call Lifeline. So maybe I should include that at the end of my talks as well, I don't know. But it's not intended to upset you, but just as I do with young people, I think the Buddha's teachings, when we look at them, can help us to think about things more. It's not as though we're telling. The Buddha never wanted to tell anybody how to think, but he presented things that he felt would be helpful for people if they practiced it in their own way. And just, not to believe what the Buddha said. He said, don't believe me, but try it. And if you think it brings you well-being, if you think it brings you happiness, then, keep doing that. But everything with the Buddha's teachings, there are things that, when I first hear them, not necessarily understand it deeply enough to get a benefit from it, and that's okay as well.